Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Well, you have seen him all over the place in the media, Eric Erickson. He has been a contributor to CNN, was the CEO of Red State, which is a website that I read and prep on often. And now he works with The Resurgent and has a syndicated talk radio show. Eric Erickson, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
I am great. Thank you for having me.
There's a couple things I wanted to talk to you about, and I think they sort of fold into each other because, and let's start with the coronavirus right now, and then I want to get to the story about the cross on your lawn. You have had a very measured response to the coronavirus. In fact, I highly respect your writing on this because you have a family member who is vulnerable to it, part of the population that is vulnerable to it. And so obviously you have deep concerns, but you also have been writing about the bright spots that the media is not covering. What is your take on how the media has handled this pandemic?
You know, for a group of people obsessed with the president's lack of response in January and February, the New York Times was running stories that they were worried the president was going to overreact, and because he was a germaphobe and people should still be going to China, and it was xenophobic to not want to go to China. I almost think there's a lot of projection. They're blaming the president because they themselves didn't take it seriously.
Right.
And listen, there are things that he probably should have been doing, just in light of the Peter Navarro memo from January. They probably should have started going through the stockpiles of masks to see if there was dry rot. That's been a long-term concern, things like that. But I actually think he's been doing what the media wanted him to do. He's been letting the experts control things. Now, I've got as much concern, frankly, with the people out there now desperate to get back to work, which I totally understand, by the way, but now suddenly casting doubt on the experts the president's believing, whether it's Dr. Fauci or Dr. Birx. I think they're good people, and they certainly, their concern is public health, not the economics, and we'll be able, I think, to get to a point where we balance letting some people go back to work. But the mass hysteria out there right now, I don't think is helpful on either side, and the media just perpetuates it irresponsibly.
I agree. I happen to think that I'm watching very closely Sweden's reaction to this, and I'm watching other countries. I believe that it was prudent to do basically kind of a nationwide shutdown that we have been engaged in for the last two or three weeks. I am concerned about what happens if we go beyond May 1st. And so what I'm calling for, similar to what Dana Perino called for, and I've been begging my governor about this, and some governors around the country have started to do this, but is to start to set some benchmarks that we understand as a society, because I wrote a piece about this on social media. I said, if you don't have hope, you don't have anything. And people need hope in order to be more cooperative with this process. And so if you could say that in 2 weeks, if we have reached this point, then we can roll out this part of the economy. And in 2 weeks after that, if we have reached this point, then we can do this part of the economy. And understanding we might have to slide those dates, but it gives people and businesses some hope and a reason to cooperate together. I was watching this pandemic documentary on Netflix, which if you haven't watched it yet, it'll creep you out because it came out right before this pandemic hit. And there was a guy in India that was talking about the bird flu outbreak. And he said, the public can't handle this on their own. The government can't handle this on their own. And scientists can't handle this on their own. The only way we can beat this is to be cooperative between the three, all three cooperating together.
Look, I think there's got to be a level of cooperation, and I'm kind of concerned with the people on both sides who came into this with prior made assumptions and come out of this by never reassessing those and are convinced dogmatically they're still right. Like the socialists who decide the private sector doesn't matter when it's the private sector that actually is saving us, and frankly some of my libertarian friends who think big government is bad and we never should have helped these small businesses that are going to collapse otherwise. You got to be able to reassess based on this. Cooperation is key. Mm-hmm. But man, just going back to the media for a minute, some of the stuff that they're peddling out there, like for example, Andrew Cuomo says that there is anecdotal evidence that hydroxychloroquine is working. The president says it, they go nuts. Andrew Cuomo says it, they give him a pass.
Right.
There almost is this desperate need to live in the same world that existed prior to the pandemic. On all sides, but particularly in the media, they demand the president change his behavior, and he does, and yet they're incapable of doing the same. And so people see this and they say, well, maybe the world hasn't changed if all of these people's behavior isn't changing.
Yeah, well, and they did it the opposite way as well. They did both sides of that, because when the president started talking about reopening businesses down the road in a couple of weeks, the news media went absolutely nuts. Then Cuomo right. mentioned it, and they didn't say a word when Cuomo mentioned it. So I'm like, it was literally coming from both sides. And I feel like, you know, we've lost a partner in this, Eric. I started out in media as a news guy, and I've always been conservative, and I worked in a public radio newsroom of all places. And my very liberal boss, who we're still friends to this day, came to me on my first day, and he was like, look, he knew I was conservative. He said, look, Leland, you cannot be unbiased. That's not possible. All of our life points of view come from how we, you know, we view the world a certain way. It's our life experience. He goes, what you can be, what you must be, is fair. And that really stuck with me, because I was like, that's it. That's the key. Everybody sees things through the prism of their own life, but we can all be fair. And the Fourth Estate, the media, was supposed to protect us against politicians, quote-unquote experts, business people, etc., going off the rails. And I feel like we've lost that ally in this situation, that the media is concerned about two things, profit and taking Trump out, and nothing else seems to matter to them. Fairness, journalistic ethics has gone out the window.
It really has. I mean, they really are part of the resistance movement against the president. You know, I worked at CNN, and I was always amazed. I went from 3 years at CNN to 5 years at Fox, and would have people come up to me at Fox and say, oh, yeah, I read The Resurgent, or I read Red State. And at CNN, it would be pulling me off to the side and whispering, I read your stuff, or, right. or I listen to you on the radio. But yet I know plenty of journalists at CNN who understand they've got a bias. And they work very hard to accurately represent the other side. And I mean, I've had more than one prominent evangelical in the country tell me they actually enjoy going on certain CNN shows more than Fox, because the CNN shows treat them more fairly and push them in ways that they don't get pushed. And it actually makes them better. And so it really depends. But, you know, if I can circle back just to the economic aspect of it, it's like Jake Tapper the other day actually did a monologue on the president needs to give us a plan. And he acknowledged that he's going to get attacked for the plan, but he still needs to give us one. Mm-hmm. And it very much I seeing conservatives attack Tapper, who I actually respect a great deal, for saying that when everyone else is saying it, it's going to give people hope. You're absolutely right. You know, I did a monologue on my radio show the other day talking about Noah, who continues to throw birds out the windows with the ark every week. And finally, one comes back with an olive leaf, and, right. and then one comes back with more, and then one doesn't come back. It's like, hey, all right, we now know. We've been reassessing every week. Everybody on the ark knows what the birds are doing. Let's now open the doors. It must be safe to come out. We need the birds to right. be coming back and giving us feedback. And right now, we don't have that. And I know the president has that data. That's one thing that's been so missed in the media, that zip code by zip code across the nation, this White House has done a detailed analysis, and they're tracking when it will be safe to reopen the doors again. But they probably need to start talking about that publicly.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the key. Again, giving that hope. You know, the plan that I'm calling for is that we remain in the situation we're in right now until either the middle of April, or actually we're approaching that, but maybe, you know, another couple of weeks until kind of the 1st of May. And what we should have at that point is we should have everyone personally, everyone should go, which should have a mask. We should have technology. Hopefully, you know, businesses can say, look, if you can show that you're testing your employees, you know, if our testing is up to par, you can test your employees' temperature as they walk in the door every morning, and you can give them a quick return coronavirus test as soon as that's available. And then you can give us a plan for how you're going to keep your customers 6 feet apart. You can begin to open that part of the business, but we're going to ask the elderly and people with immune compromised systems to stay home, and we're going to find some interesting and innovative ways to get stuff to them that they need. And then 2 weeks after that, if we're at this place, you know, just benchmarks, that we can slide those benchmarks if we're not getting there. You know, if we go, whoops, we got it wrong, the peak's not happening, you're not social distancing, we're going to have to push this back a week. That's where you get that cooperation, is when we're talking about how we come out of this. Not saying it has to happen tomorrow, but we're talking about it. People have hope that they're not going to have to keep watching the Tiger King series over and over and over again on Netflix.
Look, I got to finish the Tiger King series. This thing is wild.
Oh, my gosh. What episode are you on?
So I've only – honest to goodness, I've only started the second episode.
Oh,
we've been busy, and everybody keeps telling me, you got to finish it. You got to finish it. And I didn't even realize Westworld started back. There's a lot of stuff I got to watch.
God bless this quarantine, because I'm watching things I've been wanting to watch for years. Just know this. You're going to have one of two reactions to the Tiger King. You're either going to be like, dear God, I can never get that 7 hours of my life back. Or you're going to be like, that was the most entertaining and riveting 7 hours of television I have ever seen. But regardless, you're going to want everybody that shows up on camera to go to jail. that's how it's going to be. Like,
a very dear friend of mine actually texted me a couple of weeks ago, was pushing me on watching the series. And he said, this is the first documentary I've ever seen where there is no protagonist.
Yes, yeah, that's perfect. That is a great way to describe it. I love it. You're like, who do I root for here? I can't. I just can't. Speaking of the media, let's talk about what happened to you last week. You are a very, and this is one of the things I respect about you, you are a very strong person of faith. You're an outspoken Christian. And as a result of that, people who know you and have followed you know that it is not strange for you to, in various ways, publicly proclaim your Christianity and salvation. And I saw the picture that you posted, and it was just a lit cross. It was a cross in your front yard lit up with Christmas lights. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, we're approaching Easter. Eric Erickson is celebrating Easter. The next thing you know, Newsweek magazine has a story with a breathless headline, quote, conservative radio host Eric Erickson criticized for placing, quote, burning cross in his front yard. What?
Yes. Well, and you know, the next day they did change the headline to criticize for racial insensitivity for putting lights on a cross, which actually makes no sense.
That makes no sense.
But yeah, so there are a group of local boys here, brothers. We know the family, and there's a faith over fear campaign nationwide. And here in Middle Georgia, where I am, these boys, they're using their own money to build crosses, 7-foot-tall crosses, for people to put in their yards for Easter. And they're using the money they get, $20 a cross, and they're using that money to buy snacks for doctors and nurses and hospitals.
Right.
So I paid double. I paid $40 for one cross, told them to keep the money to buy the snacks, put it in my yard. And several of my neighbors have these, and they've been wrapping them in Christmas lights, which I thought is great. You know, scripture says the light shines in the darkness. The darkness can't overcome. We can't go to church. This is a great way to remind people it's Holy Week. So I did it, put up a picture on Instagram. And left-wing trolls just came out of the woodworks to accuse me of putting symbolically a burning cross in my yard. Now, first of all, what idiot Klansman burns a cross in their own yard? but second, it's Christmas lights
right.
on a cross. And, you know, if there's an upside to this now, there are probably – yesterday it was 36, and there are probably now about 50 of these in my neighborhood. People saw that article and were so enraged. A black couple down the street actually brought me extra Christmas lights for the cross.
I love it. You know, because here's the thing. Okay, if you were one guy and it wasn't anybody else doing it and it wasn't Holy Week and you did that, I could see maybe a very far stretch where someone could misconstrue what you did. But it was Holy Week. They were obviously Christmas lights. What, do you have a KKK chapter in the middle of this middle-class neighborhood in Georgia? No. I mean, there's so many parts about this that didn't make sense. And I get the internet trolls because I'll post stuff on Twitter and they'll get it wrong or read it wrong or take it wrong. And okay. But the fact that the mainstream media went with the headline, did they even call you before they did the headline?
So it was interesting. I found an email from the Newsweek reporter asking me for comment, and he sent it like an hour before he posted the story.
Right. That's it. That's it.
Yes. That's it. That was the only reach out.
Wow. You know, I was calling on Newsweek to change the headline, or not to change the headline, but to change the story and correct it. Did they ever correct it? Did they ever apologize to you, or did they just change the headline?
They just changed the headline. That was it. And, you know, I do have to say credit where it's due to several media outlets, one of which National News Network. It reached out to me and said, just heads up, a progressive outlet is pushing the story and we've taken a pass as a news network,
yeah.
Which I really appreciated them doing. But it was interesting. It was a progressive group they said was pushing the story. I mean, clearly just another hit job. And what a dumb one to do during Holy Week. Yeah. It really does show you the disconnect of an increasingly progressive base of reporters who don't even understand what this week is all about.
Yeah, as a Christian, I actually was offended. I mean, I'm not offended by anything because I just, you know, you can't be a radio host or a podcast or anything like that and be offended by much.
Right.
But as a Christian, I would be more likely to be offended that the media is belittling and minimizing my faith because they can't grasp Holy Week and the various symbology that we attach to that. You know, Christmas lights as a Christian symbol anyway, represent light and life and eternal life. Lighting a cross in such a way is so far from burning one in terms of the symbology that's there that it's clearly people that, one, like you said, a targeted attack, but two, in the process of a targeted attack, disrespected one of the basically the largest religion in the world because of their lack of understanding of it.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. This is a real phenomenon now in the national press that is they're covering Christians and almost a Christians in their midst environment of it. It's the largest religion in the world. It's now, based on the data coming out of China and Iran, actually the fastest growing religion in the world. And you've got a mainstream American press that doesn't actually understand it. And the only time they ever write about Christianity is to try to tie it into the prevailing politics of the day in the country.
Yeah,
they have the hardest time doing it. It's really the tone deafness in the press.
Well, I was going to say that not only are they writing about it in tone deaf ways, they're actually, I think, outright hostile to it, unless they can turn the scripture on us and use it to support socialist type things like, well, Jesus was a socialist, whatever. They try to use that and say, well, Jesus would open the borders and Jesus would take, you know what I mean? And it's like, that's the only right. time they ever love, you know, Christianity. The rest of the time, they're downright antagonistic to it and belittling to it.
I think it was Barna. Don't hold me to that, but I think it was Barna noted this past week that 1% of churches in the country are still meeting, and something like 92% of the media coverage in the last week about churches in America have been about churches defying shelter-in-place
right,
orders,
right.
When only 1% of churches in the nation are.
That's an interesting statistic. I did a faith program with a pastor friend of mine that we did online for his congregation. And in that conversation, he said he was getting anecdotal reports from across the country that literally tens of thousands of people were coming to Christ. Fox News reported that Bible sales were through the roof. All of this happening with churches meeting non-traditionally. It's interesting that Christianity in a way is growing because people are turning to faith because they see their own mortality in a situation like this. They don't need to defy these orders. And so the vast majority of them are not defying these orders.
Yeah, I'm always a little bit concerned, and I used to not be until I went to seminary. I'm a little bit concerned with people who decide, you know what, I think I'm going to go find a better preacher online than the one I've got here in town.
Right.
Because there is a community aspect
to
actually being in church. But at the same time, the amount of people who are now connecting at a faith level and going in search of it, it should be really encouraging to people. Like I said the other day, that there's a verse in Genesis 50:20, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good, Joseph and his brothers. And Newsweek clearly, and these trolls clearly meant to attack me.
Right.
And the result is now there are about 50 more crosses in my neighborhood.
Right.
And these kids have way more money to buy snacks for the nurses and doctors in our city.
That's awesome.
Than before Newsweek decided to do this attack.
I love that. It just totally backfired on them. Do you think when you were getting the trolls, I mean, did you receive death threats? How bad did it get?
We got some really nasty. Well, I did got a lot of nasty hate mail and comments. They tried to overwhelm. Instagram is the one social media platform where I try never to be political.
Right.
And they overwhelmed it. I was getting all sorts of nasty stuff. No death threats. Just you're in the Klan. People spelling my name E-R-I-C-K with two extra K's on the end.
Oh, my God.
And a lot of that. And I've come to expect it. But it sometimes comes in these waves and it just really can overwhelm you. And I actually spent way more time having to clean up social media and delete comments and block people than I otherwise would have. But thankfully, this time they didn't come after my family, which was good.
Yeah. How much trouble do you think the media is in? I mean, I think it's constantly setting its hair on fire over things. And as a result of that, I think it's the people don't trust it. And in a time like this, more than ever, we need a non-biased media that helps unify the country you know, not that we have to go in lockstep with everything the government says and does. And certainly there's a lot of questions to be asked about the data and the contradicting data that we're getting. I posted a thing on Twitter last night. You know, I listed like 8 or 9 different agencies that are all supposed to be tackling this, and none of them are on the same page. I get that. We can ask those questions. Right. We're responsible to ask those questions. But at the same time, it seems as though instead of trying to get to the bottom of the virus, the best way to deal with the virus, the facts about the virus, it seems as though everything about the virus is just being used as some other attack line. And that's getting old and tiresome.
It is, and they're doing a brilliant job of undermining their own credibility. Media trust is at an all-time low, and it continues to get worse. It doesn't help when you've got a news organization like CBS that runs that story about the nurse that turns out not to be true, or shows the bodies piled up in Italy and claims it's New York City.
Right.
They're their own worst enemy, and the problem is I don't think anymore that the news media is capable of self-reflection, and there was a time that they could. But they can't anymore. And a lot of it has to do with increasingly the feeder system for the media is left-wing think tanks and young left-wing progressive bloggers who come out of these think tanks and they go into the media, but they suddenly think they get the veneer of objectivity to continue doing what they've always been doing. And that totally undermines the credibility of the media. You go to post-World War II and even post-Vietnam, the majority of the members of the press were not professional members of the press. They were people who came out of other environments and became members of the press. Right. Now you've got these feeder systems of activists and people who've never had a real job suddenly trying to understand the world and relate the world to other people.
Yeah. Well, a perfect example of that was the hashtag film your local hospital movement. I had a lot of people were asking me, what do you think about this? Look at all these hospital videos where there's nothing going on. And I wrote a piece about this. I kind of got attacked for it, too, by those people that think that the virus is nothing. And I was like, look, I do believe that there's a lot of hospitals in the country that are not overrun by this. In fact, there's a lot of rural hospitals that are dealing with a problem of this thing didn't materialize the way they said it would, probably because we social distanced and they canceled all the elective surgeries. Now they don't have the money and that's a problem. But I said, you can't go to say, like, if you go outside and stand outside a hospital in New York City right now, you're going to have a very different story than standing outside of one in Omaha. And yet I have a very good friend who's helping with the emergency response in the Navajo Reservation in Navajo Nation in Arizona. And they have, maybe 100 people, 150 people with this virus. That is a huge problem for them because they have hospitals that maybe they have 100 beds in the hospital, but 90% of those beds are dedicated to something else. And 10 of those beds are dedicated to whatever infectious disease might come in. And if you have 15 people that need one of those, you are now 50% overrun. So you can stand outside that hospital and there's not going to be a mob trying to get in, but you still have a 50% overrun situation. So standing outside of a hospital in Omaha or Kayenta, Arizona, is not going to tell you the story of what's going on inside that hospital. It's irresponsible. And these sort of citizen journalists that don't understand the context of a story are doing the opposite of what the mainstream media is doing that also deliberately skew the context of a story.
I'm glad you said that because it's increasingly a pet peeve of mine. My wife is actually upstairs right now sewing masks for friends of ours who are nurses and doctors who can't get their supply at their local hospital. And in our area, we've got about 100 people who have the virus in our county. We've got the hospital capacity for it right now. The problem is that they're afraid there are a lot of people who have it who aren't getting counted. And also the people who have cancer, heart attacks, strokes, car wrecks, they can't get into the hospitals now because one, they don't want to get the virus, and two, ICU space is overwhelmed right now. Forget the local hospital space, the ICU space is at capacity. So people are not able to get hospitalized for other things now. And there's just everyone gets online and decides they're an expert and we shouldn't listen to the experts. And there have been so many experts to abuse their position in the past few years. I understand the distrust, but you know, epidemiological modeling has been around for more than 100 years, and they know how to do it. And it's actually a good sign they're revising the numbers down as new data comes in, as opposed to the environmentalists who want you to believe New York was flooded 5 years ago and is still underwater today.
Right. Exactly. It's a great point. Just kind of a way of wrapping up, and I really appreciate you taking time to join us. I hate what happened to you, but I love how it turned out. And I think your positivity through that and the way you handle that probably helped to turn that into a good story rather than a bad one. And it really shamed the media and showed how stupid internet trolls can be. Do you have, I mean, you study the media, you've worked in the media, you've been on these networks. How do we save this? How do we fix this? Because we're so splintered right now.
Know.
I mean, there's so many ways to get media out there. I mean, I'm one of a gabillion right. podcasts. I mean, how do we fix journalism?
I don't know that it is fixed unless there's even more pain because, you know, at the local level, there was never a major problem and they're the ones financially hit. The CNNs, the MSNBCs, the ABCs, the NBCs, they're doing okay because they've got major corporate overlords who can subsidize them to a degree. And, you know, right. in CNN's case, I've always thought it was fascinating. CNN subsidizes Warner because CNN's so profitable. So how do you get them to realize they've got a problem? I don't, if this crisis won't give them a wake up call, I'm not sure. And so what I think is going to happen is we're going to increasingly revert back to the 19th century model of you're going to have the Republican outlet and the Democrat outlet.
Yeah.
And the Democrat outlet's never going to acknowledge that they're a Democrat outlet while continuing to bash the Republican outlet as a Republican outlet.
Right. I loved your response, by the way, to you posted a picture of the Newsweek headline and you said, quote, people on the Internet say, by the way, let me use the attention to encourage you to join me on my radio show. That people on the Internet say is the worst.
Honest to goodness, it is the worst trend in media right now, and they're all guilty of it. Five angry people on the Internet generate a news story.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
It blows my mind that that's where we are in the credible press.
It is indeed. Eric, you can see his work at The Resurgent, and that is a terrific conservative coalition website. And also your radio show, give me your call letters and your, more importantly, give me your website that people can listen to your show online if they're not in Georgia.
You can go to WSBRadio.com and you can always just search for the Eric Erickson Show on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, you name it.
Fantastic. And do you have a book out, don't you?
I do. It's called Before You Wake. It's not a political book. My wife and I both, I nearly died. My wife's got a form of cancer, and I wrote a book for my kids. If something happens to mom and dad, here's what you need to know. And turns out in writing the book, I discovered politics ain't all that important.
Yeah, awesome. I love it. Well, I love that side of you as well. Thanks for your time today. God bless you. Appreciate you coming on with us. Prayers for your wife and family as well. Stay safe and stay healthy, Eric.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day. Eric Erickson, The Resurgent, he is terrific. You love the guy. I don't always agree with him politically. In fact, what's funny is he was a never Trumper and now he supports Trump because he saw the economic stuff. And he's like me. He's like a lot of other Christian conservatives who are like, yeah, there's a little bit of ick attached to President Trump, but the decisions that he's making are solid. And so he's kind of come around in that sense of it. But he's a fair-minded, even-minded person. And I respect his writing and I respect his work on the radio and in media. And what happened to him with Newsweek is just another example of why people don't trust the media. 100%. Speaking of the media distorting things, I just want to give you some examples of what's been going on in the media with regards to the coronavirus. I thought it was interesting that last week when the governor set about to attack churches in Kentucky by sending the state police to whatever services people showed up to. The mainstream media was there to cover it. These evil churches meeting and spreading the disease. And I thought, wait a minute. If the media is there, are they social distancing? And people were like, well, they were standing 6 feet apart in the parking lot. Well, how do you know they weren't sitting 6 feet apart inside the church building? Because nobody went in there to check. And I thought it was interesting that even though they were standing 6 feet apart in the parking lot, the state police gave the media notices, too, that the health department was going to come and quarantine them for 14 days. And I thought, how ironic. The media didn't even realize that they were helping to attack a part of the same right that is ascribed in the First Amendment as the right that's ascribed to the press. In other words, the First Amendment covers multiple very important rights that are given to us by God and not government, and that in no time can the government take away from us, and that is the right to press, the right to assembly, the right to religious freedom. And I thought that was ironic, but the media has been using the COVID outbreak to try and tear down and get rid of this president. They have used every possible tactic at their at the end of their arm's length throughout the process of his presidency. I have never seen such blatant activism on the part of the media. I mean, it's media has always been biased, and frankly, there's not even all that much wrong with bias as long as you're fair. But there is no such thing as ethical journalism anymore. And I thought it was funny that the media just had a complete conniption fit at the White House press briefing the other day because the president turned this back around on them. And now the media likes to paint President Trump as some sort of authoritarian dictator type while ironically advocating for him to have more dictator type powers during this process. But their lies are so obvious. You know, they're saying that the president, he downplayed this disease and cost American lives. Well, yesterday the president took video clips in the White House briefing and played them for the media of the media minimizing the COVID-19 virus outbreak. They think he's anti, like, First Amendment, and he's not. He's actually, he just gives it back to him. He's the first president that I have ever seen that literally gives the crap that the media gives to him right back. He wraps it up with a bow and gives it right back to them. He doesn't suppress them. He doesn't get in the way of them doing their jobs. He simply calls them out for doing their jobs badly and rolls their crap right back in front of them and serves it to them for dinner. It's pretty amazing. So here's the president playing video of the media downplaying the coronavirus. That is awesome. He just rolls this ball up and just plays it right back for them. It's fantastic. And then there's this. Okay, so Trump just kind of gave it right back to the media yesterday. He's actually right here. I know the media doesn't like this, but the other day, for the second time during this whole process, the governor, Gavin Newsom of California, praised the president's handling of this. Cuomo and the president have been working closely together. The president went on to just, again, wrap up another ball of crap that the media had thrown at him and essentially feed it back to them for dinner. And that drives them more crazy than anything. I don't think they see how easily triggered they are. It's really kind of funny, to be honest with you. And I think most Americans see right through it. I mean, it's like Fauci later got up at the press conference and was like, the president acted the moment we asked him to. Now, I happen to believe the president shouldn't be listening to everything that Fauci says. Fauci's been wrong multiple times, and Fauci also has admitted that the models they're using to do what they've done have absolutely been wrong as well. But that being said, in terms of the media loves Fauci, right? And they love Fauci because he's the doom and gloom guy. And what's interesting is that Fauci originally also downplayed this at the very beginning. And then when he got it together, he went to the president and said, President Trump, say they can't, they love Fauci because they say that Trump's not following Fauci's orders or Fauci's, you know, advice or whatever. And yet yesterday Fauci gets up and says, the president, the first time me and Dr. Birx visited him and said we should do this, he did exactly what we said. The second time we visited him and he said he should do this, he did exactly what we said. So how can the media continue to love Fauci and hate Donald Trump? Because Fauci told Donald Trump what he should do, and Donald Trump then went and did it. So either what's going to happen is the media will either ignore that or the media will actually turn on Fauci now. So here's another scrapple that came up in all this mess, too, that I think it's worth noting. Yesterday, the president said that his authority is total and the media is jumping on that and doing comparisons between, well, where are all the conservatives who thought that Obama was a dictator? Clearly, when President Trump said his authority is total, he was talking about in a specific area when it comes to a national emergency. And it was kind of just like it's Trump speak. You know, everything is total. Everything is terrific. Everything is huge. Everything is the biggest ever, right? Like, that's the way he speaks. So watching people burn their hair on fire over this is kind of funny. But when it comes to opening up the country, the president's kind of right. Now, granted, I find it fascinating that I'm watching the media extol the virtues of federalism when I was part of the Tea Party back in 2009, 2010, the media, we were talking about states' rights and federalism and how important that was. The media actually said that talking about states' rights and federalism was coded racism. Now the media is extolling the virtues of states' rights and federalism because what they're hoping is that these governors in these states defy the president and keep their states locked down because the media wants more economic misery. But the truth is the president actually does have authority in this area. Now the states can do what they want to do up to a certain point. but only Trump has the authority to open up the country's economy. If CDC changes guidelines, which come from the Trump administration, and the states impose more stringent measures than are that are unsupported, then the states will be violating your federal constitutional rights. This is an important key point, and I was talking about this, and I want to credit my friend Brian Gettle, county attorney in Jessamine County, for this, because he is a lawyer and has got a great grasp of what is going on with this issue. And this is what he says. He says, only Trump has the authority to open up the country's economy. Granted, the states are independently in charge of their given areas, but what the states are doing, like, for instance, there's a certain amount of cover that a guy like Andy Beshear, Governor McDreamy, gets when he goes after churches because he has a statewide emergency, and he's hiding behind the fact that he says, oh, well, we're doing this for everybody. It's mass gatherings, not just churches, even though he clearly was targeting churches. He has a certain amount of cover, unfortunately, because right now there's a national emergency, and the CDC has said these are the guidelines, and so everything he's doing is staying at least within those guidelines, despite the fact that he's overreaching on churches. I think he's constitutionally wrong and would lose that case if he went to the Supreme Court. But beside that point, he does have some amount of cover because he's following guidelines from the national government. As soon as those guidelines go away, these governors have no longer got access to that cover, right? The federal government is not acknowledging the same national emergency, which means the federal government goes back to normal footing. When the federal government goes back to normal footing, all of those rights that are supposedly suspended in a situation like this now return on a federal level, which means any state that violates or supersedes them is now violating your federal rights, and this is where federalism again takes over. On a national level, there are certain rights that states can't take away from you unless they have national cover. So again, back to what Brian says, only Trump has the authority to open up the country's economy. If CDC changes guidelines and states impose more stringent measures that are unsupported, the states will be violating our federal constitutional rights. Many are already doing this. Brian says, I predict that many state and local officials, cum baby Hugo Chavez, meaning Governor Beshear, I think, will end up getting their asses sued off in federal court. No, I'm sorry. I don't want to put words in his mouth. He meant any governor that wants to be a dictator. I will personally say that would include Governor Beshear. We'll end up getting their asses sued off in federal court under 42 U.S.C. 1983 for violating our civil rights under color of law. The Michigan governor may be the first to get sued. But by the way, the Mayfield Baptist Church, I think it is suing Governor Beshear as well. So we'll see. But yeah, if the federal government says, look, we're moving to open for business guidelines, that cover that states had in shutting down people's movement goes away. And now those states will be doing it on their own, where they will be susceptible to being sued for violating federal rights. I think that's a key and important point that Brian makes, and it's a key and important point to bring up, because the mainstream media is clearly rooting for those states to defy the president. And that's where that discussion with the president came out. And when he said, my authority is total, meaning once my cover is gone for these politicians, and the president said, hey, you know, they may continue on, but if they do, we'll be tied their political career, because people are going to be like, hey, Texas just opened up. How come we can't open up, right? I mean, Kentucky's going to be in the middle of a bunch of states that are going to open up, and our governor's still going to be giving his fireside chats teaching people sign language, which, hey, that's a great thing on a normal day, but when we're trying to save our economy, there's more important things to be doing, right? So anyway, hey, thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone. I am Leland Conway. Our co-host and co-executive producer is Cameron Mills. He'll be back with us later this week. Also, big appreciation out to Dynamics Audio Productions for their help. They provide the music for this show. It's dxaudio.com for all your production needs. You can follow us on Instagram. It's at GreatlyLondo and at The Disruption Zone. On Twitter, it's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. The best way you can help me is to share this podcast. We are literally getting thousands of downloads a week. I can't believe how awesome you guys are. The audience continues to grow, and that only amplifies our voice. So the best way you can help me is to share this podcast. Get your friends to subscribe. It is free. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts. You can just subscribe on Google Play, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio's app. Just go on iHeartRadio's app and search The Disruption Zone, and bam, we pop right up. And that means you can carry me around in your pocket. Thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone. I'm Leland Conway.